Psychiatrist and regression therapist Brian Weiss is the author of Many Lives, Many Masters, and Through Time into Healing.
The Soul's Legacy by Brian Weiss, MD. The first step in nourishing your soul is to realize that it exists. I always thought of myself as a body and a brain. Through working with patients using regression therapy, I have discovered that this was a misconception. We are far more than that. We're souls having a human experience. I'm reminded every day of the power of finding one's soul. I work with patients who, under hypnosis, go back to other lifetimes. I've had so many experiences with people healing grief. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's touching and moving. An example of one of my experiences is when Joan Rivers asked to be regressed on her television show. I agreed to work in a private setting, but not on the show, because this is a very serious form of therapy to me, not a game. A few days before the show, I met with her and helped her remember two lifetimes. The more important one for her was in the 1820s, in England. She began to cry because her daughter in that lifetime was dying very young. She quickly recognized that girl as her mother from this lifetime, who had died several years earlier, and for whom she was still grieving. As she saw the connection, she began healing her grief. She could see the continuity of the soul. Her mother and daughter had never really died, because she was with them in both lifetimes. She could see that she would be again. My work is a daily reminder that we are not our bodies or our brains, but our souls. That's the part of us that is eternal. Our souls keep returning as though we were in a large school until we're able to understand and to graduate. I don't think the nature of the soul changes very much from one lifetime to the next. What changes is one's awareness. At the level of the soul, we know everything we need to know. For some reason, we have to experience physical lifetimes to learn in a different way. This is the only place where we have physical bodies and emotions. Our task here is to become more godlike, to recognize the divine and spiritual nature of our soul. To do that, we need to unlearn rather than to learn. When we unlearn fear, violence, greed, ego, and power, then kindness, joy, love, and spiritual wisdom are all there. We are constantly progressing through many spiritual dimensions. When we have finally progressed to the level of complete integration with our soul, we find God. We all have a tendency to slip back into the three-dimensional world. There are several things we can do to stay in touch with our soul. The most important thing is to go within. This doesn't have to be formal Eastern meditation. You can meditate with your eyes open. You can meditate while walking or being close to nature. The purpose is to remind yourself of your true nature, which is that of a spiritual being. You're not your body. The body is like a car and you're the driver. As you find your true nature, you find that you are really a being of love. And when you think about it, you see that everyone else is too. So besides meditating, practice acts of love. Reach out to others. Don't worry so much about the end results. As you do this, you recognize the unity and universality of our nature. Souls don't have races or sexes or religions. They are beyond artificial divisions. The more you go within, the more you understand your true nature and the more joy and happiness you feel in your life. That is very motivating. It is so pleasant that it inspires us to increase the time spent meditating or helping others or giving and receiving love. For that reason, the process of rediscovering the soul gets easier as you go along. On the other hand, we work on different traits at different times. In one series of lifetimes, you may be working on greed, in another, lust, and in another, violence. As you conquer one negative trait, you may go back to the beginning with another. There are starts and stops. As you come into a new lifetime, you may have forgotten some of the joy of finding the soul, but there will be reminders to lead you along the way. We are all heading in the same direction, but perhaps at different speeds. Often when traumatic or catastrophic events occur, we don't understand the significance. But with time and understanding, we see how that event caused our soul to grow. When we view the event with a different perspective, we see that it was necessary for our spiritual growth, even though it was painful at the time. Sometimes when I work with lifetimes, I find the most traumatic ones are the ones where the most growth has occurred. Sometimes an easy lifetime, where everything is smooth, means we're resting and not really learning as much as quickly. Sometimes a person might choose to do 2 or 3 lifetimes in one because the progress is so rapid. We're allowed to do that. A good metaphor for our progress is to think of ourselves as multifaceted diamonds. Some of us have facets that are covered with dirt and tar, which stand for ignorance. All of us are the same under the dirt and tar, but some have many clean facets, others just a few. When all the facets are clean and the diamond is gleaming beautifully, the solid form is transformed into light. That is our soul. I believe we are all part of a universal soul. At some level, we are all the same. We are all connected. Everyone in our drama is a facet of ourselves, and we are a facet of them. We are all facets of the same energy, an energy possessing incredible wisdom and love. We all have God within us.
Therapist, educator, and lecturer, Benjamin Shield has written extensively about psychology, healing, spirituality, and physical medicine. He co-edited Handbook for the Soul. His other books include Healers on Healing and For the Love of God.
Letting Go of the Mountain by Benjamin Shield, PhD. One afternoon, a man named Harry went mountain climbing. All in all, things were going very well. Then suddenly, the path he was walking on gave way, taking Harry with it. With flailing arms, Harry managed to grab hold of a small branch on the side of the mountain. Holding on for dear life, he screamed, "Help! Help! Is anybody up there?" Miraculously, the clouds parted, and a beam of light illuminated Harry as he hung tenuously from the branch. A voice, clearly the voice of God, spoke directly to Harry and said, "Harry, I will save you. I am all that is good, all that is true, and all that has meaning. Let go, Harry. I will save you. Let go." Harry thought hard about this. Then, with a sudden burst of conviction, he looked up the mountain and shouted, "Is anybody else up there?" How often we find ourselves in Harry's position. Do we find ways to hold on tighter and tighter to what we know won't support us? Or do we learn to let go into the realm of the soul? Letting go is one of the most difficult challenges human beings ever face. I've always pictured letting go as transformation, moving from a closed fist to an open hand. As we take an open-handed attitude towards life, we can be free of the self-made obstructions that litter our path. This process requires a willingness to shed our persona, those inauthentic trappings we hold on to for identity but no longer serve us. Like Harry, each of us is faced with these choices every day. The choice to let go frees us to follow the pathway to our soul. And when we embark on our journey to soul, what then? Is the soul a fragile piece of art like some holy chalice that we now safely and adoringly preserve in a glass box? Or is the soul the way we view our world, seeing the best and most authentic elements in everyone in our lives and everything around us? The soul can be experienced by releasing the familiar and safe, by the constant renewal and expression of our presence in the world, and by the moment-to-moment attention we give to daily life. Then the relationship we have with our soul becomes the model for the relationship we have with our world. Our soul's journey is not about acquiring more and more knowledge. It is a journey of reminding ourselves of those precious truths we have long known. It is not a process of gathering enough data to eventually achieve the big aha. Instead, our soul's journey is a process of freeing ourselves to the newness of each moment, constantly clearing away those thoughts and fears that have obstructed access to our soul, and, equally, our soul's access to us. As Robert Frost said, "Something we were withholding made us weak, until we found it was ourselves." We might think of soul-making as the same process by which Michelangelo created his sculptures. He believed that a statue's completed form already existed in the marble. All he needed to do was chisel away everything that was not the completed sculpture, and it would appear. This is the nature of the soul, perfect yet hidden. Our marble can be chiseled away by the passionate desire to know our soul, as well as its obstructions. Experiencing the soul is like the magic you feel when falling in love. This is the time when our ego boundaries, those defensive walls we build around ourselves to keep us separate from one another, crumble. This is a time of soul nourishment. Remember the feeling that infused our souls when singing and dancing with abandonment, witnessing a birth, hearing Schubert's Ave Maria for the first time, becoming lost in another's eyes. Ironically, we often describe these special moments as losing ourselves. In the losing, we are actually finding ourselves. Letting go, then, becomes the gateway to creation, to generating soul. In our search for soul, it is important to bring along two things, humility and unknowing. This means being completely present with an open heart and open mind. This openness is not an absence of thought, but rather a clear attentiveness to the moment. It is achieved not by effort, but by letting go, giving up the need to be in control and dissolving our preconceptions of the way things should be. All experiences that bring our minds into attentiveness, into the present, guide us on the path to our soul. When I am in doubt as to how to begin, I try to allow myself the time to clear my mind and open my heart. Sometimes I might focus on my breathing, feeling the breath travel up my hands, arms, and shoulders toward my head on the inhalation, then slowly down toward my feet on the exhalation. Or I might be transported by feelings of being in love or by watching my dog, Annie, play with her friends. Negative thoughts and the powerfully dramatic feelings associated with them often get in the way of experiencing wholeness, as though they rested on opposite sides of a balance. When negativity goes up, soul goes down, as do intelligence, perspective, and almost any possibility for a genuine moment in life. When I'm coming from a place of negativity, especially directed at myself, my tendency is to react towards life, and the present moment becomes diverted by past remorse or future insecurity. It feels as if I have one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake. This dichotomy wears on my soul, my mind, and my body. When I come from a place of letting go, from the closed fist to the open hand, I am infinitely more present, loving, intelligent, and peaceful. When we choose to let go of self-judgment, we create greater access to the wisdom of the body. We experience a new comfort and greater love for ourselves and others. A new vision dawns, and we become more capable of experiencing our soul's birthright. It is in the domain of the soul that we have the most perspective, intelligence, and love. In this non-judgmental place, we can bring forward new paradigms and visions. The soul is where self-judgment is transformed into self-compassion, where the self-inflicted wounds can heal. Viewing the world through the experience of negativity is like looking at the world through a pinhole. When we view the world from the eyes of the soul, every day is as if we were seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time. Our body is the most sacred resource available to experience soul. For centuries, many of the world's theologies have exhorted us to transcend the body in order to achieve higher soul consciousness. The body was viewed as an outright obstacle to our soul's growth. To me, being in one's body is an essential component of soulfulness. In a passage from Ulysses, James Joyce tells of a man who lived just a short distance away from his body. Ignoring the innate wisdom of our bodies prevents us from accessing all of our resources and diminishes our perception of soul to a cerebral experience. At times like these, I look at a beautiful painting and think to myself, "This is beautiful," rather than feeling its beauty in every cell of my body. We have entered a time that is beginning to accept what William Blake said long ago. Man has no body distinct from his soul, for that called body is a portion of soul discerned by the five senses, the chief inlets of soul. My work as a therapist has confirmed for me that the body is a crucible where our thoughts, actions, and emotions are transformed into soul. The body continues to guide us as we wend along our soul's path. For example, when I wander from my soul's path, my body signals me with strong physical messages, such as headaches, illness, or fatigue. They are like voices warning me, "I have strayed." If I ignore these voices, they become louder and more adamant. These divergences from our path show up as physical and emotional dis-eases. Soul is where the fires of our passions burn. It is where our love is most alive. The soul longs for this deeper love, for a connection between form and formlessness, for a continuum between the earth and the divine. Don't be fooled into thinking that you are alone on your journey. You're not. Your struggle is everyone's struggle. Your pain is everyone's pain. Your power is everyone's power. It is simply that we take different paths along our collective journey towards the same destination. I do not believe that any technique, secret knowledge, or mystical practice to find soul is more effective than the simple practice of letting go. When we focus the power of our attention on the present, the full measure of our soul is available to each of us at every moment. Remember that soul is not a destination, but a journey. The journey of the soul sends us through burning stars out beyond the dark, icy planets. This journey takes us through the knowing and the unknowing, the discovery and the recovery, the letting go. And best of all, the journey always returns us to our true selves.
Wayne Dyer, Ph.D. His books include Your Erroneous Zones, Pulling Your Own Strings, and The Sky's the Limit.
Becoming a Waking Dreamer by Wayne Dyer, Ph.D. The greatest sense of happiness and contentment possible can be achieved with relative ease. Unfortunately, many of us suffer the sadness of feeling separated from ourselves, from others, or from life itself. Carl Jung once said, "In about one-third of my cases, the patients are suffering from no clinically definable neuroses, but from the senselessness and emptiness of their lives." Jung writes of the four stages that people go through in their development as human beings. In the lowest stage, which he calls the athlete, the emphasis is almost entirely on the physical body. In the second stage, the adventurer, or warrior stage, physical prowess is extended outward. From there, progressing to the statesman or wisdom stage, the physical exploits are left behind and the energy is primarily channeled into wisdom. At the fourth and highest stage of maturation, the spiritualist stage, the emphasis is on the spirit rather than the body or the mind. To nourish the soul is to nourish this spiritualist, this highest part of yourself. Doing so means that our vision of life becomes more expansive. We find that the things that preoccupied us, such as the emphasis on the body, on what it can accomplish, what it looks like, how it compares to others, whether it smells right, whether it's insured, whether it's balding, what color its hair is, and whether or not it's falling out, how wrinkled the skin is, becomes less important. As you begin to leave these concerns behind, you are able to cultivate a part of yourself that I call the witness. As a witness, you begin to discover that you are not that which you have been observing. You are not those things that you have been noticing about your body. Instead, you are the noticer. As you notice that you are the noticer, you begin to understand the mechanics of creation. You learn that what you want to create in your life or on the planet is not determined by what you do with your body. Instead,
Your ability to create is determined by where you put your attention and where you leave your attention. As a witness, you can begin to participate in the quantum mechanics of creation. You become a creator because everything you observe is affected by the fact that you are observing it. The act of witnessing becomes a creative act. You witness with your soul, not your eyes, for the soul is the divine part of you that observes everything. As you begin putting much more attention and energy into your soul, you begin to discover the divineness that is within you and in everything else. To nourish the soul means to participate in the very mechanics of creation, to become a co-creator of your life and of the world as you want it to be. Those people who are still in the athlete or warrior stages, or are preoccupied with their minds, consider the idea of nourishing the soul something other folks do. But when you leave those stages behind, or as Jung puts it, mature through those stages, all those things that were so important at the lower stages now seem meaningless. They become simply things you are noticing. The soul becomes paramount. You can move through the stages to become a witness by learning how to nourish the soul. Nourishing the soul involves issues of the ego, and dealing with the ego can be confusing. In my book, Your Sacred Self, I attempt to answer questions such as, how do I know whether it is my ego or my higher self at work? Is this idea of who I am really who I am? And am I the noticer or that which is being noticed? There are differences between the ego and the higher self, differences that can be observed and used as guides in answering these questions. The ego is concerned with questions such as, how do I do it? And what are the rules? And what techniques can you offer me? The higher self, however, says, just pay attention, be at peace, and trust. As one of my favorite lines from A Course in Miracles points out, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear again. The higher part of yourself has a knowing that you are not alone, that you go where you are sent, that you will be guided, that you can surrender, and that it's going to work out. The higher self helps you look at yourself and others from the perspective of love rather than fear. If you listen carefully, you'll hear the difference between the ego and the higher self. You'll know how to nourish the soul with the energy of attention. That's really all there is to nourishing the soul. You could, of course, master 1,000 techniques of meditation, prayer, and chanting. You could read and talk to wise people. However, all you must essentially do is place your primary emphasis on the higher part of yourself, that part which is doing the observing, and create that knowing that you are being guided in a divine direction. Through this process, which I call intention, you will begin to see your ordinary life becoming extraordinary. To illustrate the concept of intention, I ask you to think about what happens when you dream at night. If in a dream you want to walk across the room, you don't have to tell your dream self to get up and begin moving. You don't have to do that while you're in your dream. You simply bring the desired action or thing to yourself through the power of your own intention. You can bring whatever you want into your dreams. You can make anything happen through the power of your intention. It all happens as you desire because you have no doubt that it will happen exactly as you wish. But then, when most people wake up, they nourish the doubting aspect of themselves by saying, I don't have the power to do that in my waking state. Who says you don't have the power to bring to yourself that which you desire? Who says you cannot master intention? I'm suggesting that you can become a waking dreamer, that you can do in your normal waking state everything you do in a dream state. The only difference between the two states of consciousness is that you don't doubt your ability when you are sleeping and in a dream state as you do when you are awake. One of the reasons you do not doubt in the dream state is that you can erase your past when you're dreaming. In a dream state, you don't have a story. If you don't have a story, there's nothing for you to live up to. You let go of all of that and free yourself. When you get rid of your past, when you are in your present moment, and when you get rid of all of the doubt, you'll know what Jung meant when he used the word synchronicity. You will begin to collaborate with fate. You will start to see exactly what you need in this moment manifesting itself in your life. At first, you may think, wow, how is this happening? But after a while, you will see you can truly manage the coincidences of your life through this state of higher consciousness. All you have to do is become a waking dreamer. One of my favorite metaphors illustrates the importance of recognizing the past for what it is. Imagine that you are on a boat heading north at around 40 knots. As you stand on the stern, looking down at the water, three questions come to mind. First, you ask yourself, what is the wake? The answer is, the wake is nothing more than the trail left behind. The second question is, what is driving the ship? The answer is that the present moment energy that you are generating through the engine is driving the ship. Finally, you ask yourself the most important question. Is it possible for the wake to drive the ship? The answer is no, of course, for the wake is just the trail that is left behind. It can never drive the boat. Now imagine that the boat is your life and the wake is all the things that have happened in the past. What your body is like, what your parents were like, where you were in the birth order, how your mother treated you, whether your father was an alcoholic, and anything else. Most people live with the illusion that their wakes are driving their lives, which is absolutely impossible. In order to nourish your soul, you must be able to get out of the wake. And when you get out of the wake, you manage your doubts as you cultivate the witness. You become the witness instead of that which is being witnessed. One way to nourish the soul, and thus become a witness, is to shut down the inner dialogue and learn to become quiet. You must have quiet in order to know your soul. As Melville said, God's one and only voice is silence. Even after you have filtered out much of the extraneous noise and are listening to your inner voice, you may wonder whether you're hearing your higher voice or your ego. If you're not sure which is speaking to you, ask yourself whether or not this inner voice promotes peace. If it promotes peace, it's your higher voice. If it promotes turmoil in any way, it's your ego. If your higher voice is speaking, you must listen. If not, ignore it. For example, there is no peace in more is better messages, in thoughts of competition, of having to defeat someone else, or of consumption. As you go inward and shut down the inner dialogue, you will become increasingly quiet. You will hear your higher voice, and you will find peace. The fact that you are meditating is not as important as what you bring back from your meditation. The goal is to bring back a sense of knowing you're not alone. The goal is getting to that place where you know that, as St. Matthew said, with God, all things are possible. Notice that this statement leaves nothing out. This is the infinite field of all possibilities. You can only reach this place by allowing yourself to become silent, by removing all the chatter and disturbances. This process of quieting all the noise will put you into the state called flow. When you are in flow, all the distractions are gone. Your overriding spiritual objective is to tune into the ecstasy of the moment. The difference between being in and out of flow is the difference between knowing God and knowing about God. Knowing about God does not nourish the soul. It is simply practicing somebody else's orthodoxy. Everything that comes from out there, regardless of whether you like it or not, comes with doubt attached. Doubt is attached to everything because it is someone else's point of view. To know about is to doubt. When you know, however, there is no doubt. Knowing God comes from within. The way to ultimately know God or your soul is to abolish all doubt. Cultivate the witness, erase your past, shut down the inner dialogue, and tame the ego. The ego isn't real. It doesn't exist. The ego is not the self. Rather, it is the idea that we have about the self as being separate, being special and important, needing to consume, being offended, and so forth. The ego is just an idea we carry around with us. In fact, if you think about it, the ego is insane. After all, insanity is defined as believing that you are something you're not, and the ego has you convinced you are something you're not. It has you believing that you are your body, that you are your accomplishments, and that competition or being better than other people is important. You are not your ego. You are really a divine and eternal spirit. You are a soulful being who is never born and never dies, having a human experience. And when you know God, when you are a part of the mechanics of creation, you have achieved the highest stage in life.
Drawing on her own experiences as a codependent, Melody Beatty has written such best-selling books as Codependent No More, Beyond Codependency, and The Lessons of Love.
Lessons of Love, Lessons of Hope by Melody Beatty. So much of our journey is learning about and removing the barriers between us and our soul. As long as people have been on this planet, we have been striving to live in connection with soul, to go forward with an open heart. I wish there were a book I could read each day to tell me exactly what to do to live consciously from my heart and soul. But part of the mystery and magic, part of the reason I'm here, is to try to stumble through and hear what the soul has to say about what it needs at each moment. Whether it is to work through an emotional block, discover what the next lesson is, meet the next soulmate, or finish my business with the one I'm with now. Ultimately, for most of us, the journey comes down to the same issue, learning to love freely. First ourselves, then other people. Sometimes I'm amazed that it's so simple to free my soul on any given day. It can be as easy as walking on the beach or touching a tree. It could come from taking a break to get a cup of coffee with a friend. It could be window shopping in a favorite mall. Taking care of one's soul could be calling a friend, taking a hot bath, reading a story to a little child, or writing a letter saying how very, very angry I am. First, we need to get in touch with ourselves. We need to express and feel the blocks to soul, whether anger, disappointment, or grief, and release them. Then we come to understand that this is part of our own process. It moves us to the next place in our journey. We are all at different stages of growth, so we each need different things to trigger that connection to the soul. What works for me on any given day might not work for someone else, or for me on another day. Often it is basic things. I live 10 feet from the ocean in a small cottage. I need to be by the water. I've spent a lot of my journey getting closer and closer to this water. I need to remember, to get up in the morning and watch the sun rise and take a moment at night to see and feel the sunset. I need to see the colors of the sky. I need to feel the colors. I need to surround myself with music because my soul resonates to music. I've decorated my home with the colors of the universe, bright colors. Color is light. Colors help me feel alive, help me feel passionate, help me remember that I'm here to be an alive, passionate human being. I need friends around me, people to laugh with, to be myself with. This is especially true for me now. Sometimes people expect you, and you begin to expect yourself, to be something you're not. Being with friends gives me the space when I feel sad or happy or giggly or giddy, just to be in that place. It's essential for me to have people around that I can be myself with, laugh with, struggle with, be crazy with, cry with. That's what nurtures my soul. I've learned that my life has cycles and seasons, just as nature does, and that I can't get too comfortable in any one season because it isn't forever. I used to think that change is part of life, everyone says that. Now I believe more deeply than that. Evolution is part of life, and we're always evolving into a new cycle, learning something, going into the next time. We learn to ride freely with that flow. When I hang on and don't go for the ride, I start getting all blocked up in my soul. I don't mean to suggest that going with the flow is easy. It isn't. Because when we do that, our conscious mind doesn't know the plan. There is no rule book. That means we have to not only connect with our soul, but also trust where it's leading us. I think that's a big part of the journey for many of us. Trust. Sometimes it seems much easier for me to go on automatic pilot, to give in to fear and limitation. Fear is my biggest challenge, not just fear by itself, because we all have fear. I get into trouble when I refuse to acknowledge the fear. I call it something else, deceive myself about why I don't want to move forward. Sometimes I find that I am paying more attention to other people's processes. I come back to my own journey when I remember that nothing is really about the other person. What I see in them as I stand and stare is actually something I need to learn about me. I am always being taught what I need to know for my journey. Frankly, the last 4 years of my life have been the hardest of my 46 in terms of the lessons I've had to face and the pain I've had to live with. But I've also learned that the journey is absolutely magical, and that not only do we live in a vibrant universe that really will dance with us, that will teach us wonderful things. It will take us to wonderful places every morning that we're willing to get up, look at the sunrise, and say, yes, a new day. Every day that we're willing to sit with and through the pain until we get to the other side. I am often asked whether I believe such things as soulmates exist. I do, but my definition of that has changed too. When I started thinking about it, I naively thought, oh, that means there is one person out there for me. And then there was also the misconception that when I found this soulmate, it would be a euphoric experience, no challenges, no triggers, a heaven on earth kind of thing. Wrong. At least in my life, that wasn't the case. I've learned that I have many, many soulmates here, and they come to me at the right time and in the right place. They come to help me when I'm lost, and each comes with different sets of lessons for me, usually always my most intense lessons, the ones my soul came here to learn. I absolutely believe that my children are soulmates, my friends are soulmates, and of course there is a special romantic relationship. The people I work with are often soulmates. They are all my teachers. I believe that we have tasks to accomplish on a spiritual level and on the physical level on this planet. I never know what the next lesson is going to be, because we're not supposed to know. We're supposed to trust ourselves to discover it. My view of why we are brought to this planet has also changed dramatically over the years. I used to think we came here to get it all together quickly, have it all together, keep it all together, and live happily ever after. I don't believe that any longer. We came here because the Earth is abundant and alive, a rich, rich field of lessons for us to learn. The lessons are not comfortable, because if we weren't challenged, it would mean that we didn't need to learn these lessons of the soul. Courage, patience, faith. Learning to love, embracing eternal life, and the most magical lesson of all, it's not what I do, it's knowing I am. We are here to learn about love, to let others love us, to discover that love is a living force, real, broad, encompassing. I have also learned that universal love is there for me and will be there for me if I am open to it and believe in it. Often, it's at our lowest points in life that we learn the most. We say, God, this is too much. Life has disappointed me beyond all belief. Or, my life just isn't what I wanted it to be. Or, I've really been missing the boat. Those low moments are also the magical moments, the turning points and junctures of our journey. So often we think, okay, now I've got to run around to get what I need. I've got to go to the mountains of Tibet or to a magical island in Hawaii. I've got to go someplace to begin this spiritual journey. But the fact is, the moment we say we want to go on that journey, we've begun it, right where we are. I trust so much in the power of the heart and the soul. I know that the answer to what we need to do next is in our own hearts. All we have to do is listen. then take that one step further and trust what we hear. We will be taught what we need to learn. Some activities help bring the lessons to the fore. Meditation works for many people. Some people find formalized religion helpful. I live in an area where Buddhism is very popular, where many people find Buddhist chants take them where they need to go. But more important than a particular technique or practice is the need to listen and tune in to the cycles of the soul. When you are ready, you will be led right into the next level of your journey, to soul connectedness. The universe will provide your options. Often the humblest acts, done with soul awareness, can help take us where we need to go. I discovered this recently. I used to be extremely poor financially, and I did all my own work myself. When I got successful, I had more money, and I paid to get a lot of things done. That help was important at the time. I was busy, and it gave me more freedom and more time with my children. But I've also found that I miss a lot in life by not doing my own dishes, washing my own laundry, raking the yard myself. Those simple, almost zen-like acts are important. They keep me in touch with how the world and my life work. For anyone trying to get in touch with the soul, I want to say, it's an alive journey. The minute you ask a question and look for the answer, it will be right there, if only you let yourself see. The awareness is your soul announcing the lesson. It may be that you're walking through a bookstore and a particular book holds your answer. Someone may bring your answer in an innocent, everyday conversation. We can even get some of our answers from movies. A friend may have the answer, a new job, an old job, taking a class, spending more time with nature, learning to connect with the cycles of the seasons. All these are our teachers. If you can really trust that the answer is right there in your heart, it will be. Nurturing my soul makes a difference. Whether we are aware of it or not, we are all on and part of an incredible journey. Something about consciously moving into it makes it a magical experience. I've gone through more pain in the last 4 years than I ever thought possible. My son died. My family became shattered. I had to begin again one more time, and I wasn't sure I wanted to. But I've also learned more about life and my soul and heart than I ever dreamed possible. In doing so, I've discovered the most ancient message of all. Even when people tell you there isn't any hope, there is. There is always hope, purpose, and a new magical lesson.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks production of Handbook for the Soul, edited by Richard Carlson and Benjamin Shield. Read for you by Blair Brown and James Coburn. Executive producer Maya Thomas, produced by Leslie Korn. Directed by Maya Thomas and Leslie Korn. Edited by Andrew Padgett and Paul Goodrich. Mixed and mastered by Paul Goodrich.